Good morning, everyone. My name is Yan Tech. And in this talk, I'm going to talk about a new evaluation method for multi-stage low structured designs. This is joint work with David Anderson and Michael Kamsky. So what are multi-stage low structured designs, or MSLS designs? So as you mentioned in the previous talk briefly, they include modern data stores such as LevelDB, RocksDB, Cassandra, and HBase. They commonly use low structured design, so they avoid writing the data to already existing file and update the data in place. But they create data structures sequentially, and they try to use sequential I/O as much as possible so that they can enjoy fast write speed. But the problem is that they cannot update the existing data, so they may end up creating many data structures on this kind of flash. So query processing can be slow by having to access these many tables. And they, these tables may occupy a large space. So MSLS designs use convection to merge multiple tables into one and reduce the table count and reclaim the space for new data. The competition is very I/O intensive, so MSLS designs use multiple stages to segregate fresh and old data, and they compact fresh data more often to reduce the compaction cost. So actually, this talk's scope does not simply include includes LSM3 variants, but also, it also includes a broader set of low structured designs such as RocksDB's universal compaction. MSLS designs are being used in many different applications, ranging from mobile app and data-intensive computing storage engine. And as you can see from this conference, many fast file systems are also being developed on top of MSLS designs. This broad application has created interesting problems. So now we are seeing large design space of these MSLS designs. They can choose different data layer, or they can choose different compaction strategy. And individual systems are very complex because they have to combine multiple algorithms and components to build a system. So it can be pretty difficult to find the right set of system parameters to achieve the best performance. And depending on the application, workloads may be very different. So optimizing a system for a single workload may not be the best for some other workload. So the question here is how to evaluate and tune MSLS designs for specific workload and achieve the best performance. So there have been several evaluation methods, but they tend to be very extreme. So this plot shows the accuracy and speed of evaluation methods. So one extreme is asymptotic analysis of core algorithms. They simply, this analysis often gives you big O notation or big theta notation for the operation cost. And this can be very fast to analyze. The accuracy is not as good as we want. And the other extreme is experiment. So you can take the full system implementation and use the synthetic workload generator or real workload trace to run the system and get the performance number. So it can be as concrete as 12K inserts per second. So this is very accurate, but speed may not be great because you have to perform request level experiment. So we want to have accurate and fast evaluation method. So we want to have a single evaluation method that can achieve both aspects. So you may ask, why do we need to have a single evaluation method that is both accurate and fast? That's because there's some cool application we can try when there's accurate and fast evaluation method. So we can build a system performance evaluator here, and we can find some set of system parameters that are critical to the system performance. So for example, for LevelDB, we can choose individual level sizes, not level count, and we can choose them as the system parameters. And then we use these parameters to estimate the system performance, and use the system performance to optimize the system parameters. And we get a new set of system parameters to give that give to the system performance evaluator. And by repeating this loop more than 16,000 times, we can get an optimized set of system parameters that can achieve a higher performance. So we applied this automatic system optimization to LevelDB, and we could improve the insert cost by up to 26.2% without changing the design of LevelDB and without sacrificing query performance. This whole optimization process finishes in 2 minutes because we used accurate and fast evaluation. And if we use the full experiment for the system performance evaluator, it would have taken years to finish the equivalent optimization. So okay, how do we actually do the evaluation, fast and accurate evaluation for MSLS designs? So we analytically model MSLS designs using new analytic primitives that consider redundancy. So our evaluation method is very accurate. It's only a few percent, up to a few percent different from actual measured result, and speed is very good. A single evaluation run takes less than 5 milliseconds for large workload containing 100 million unique keys. So in the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk a little more about how we can build the analytic model of system designs and what are these new analytic primitives. And then I'm going to compare the accuracy and speed of different evaluation methods. So we first need to define the performance metric to use. So in this talk, I'm going to focus on insert performance of MSLS designs. So and inserts are often bottlenecked by writes to flash and disk. So we need to model the I/O cost of inserts. But the thing is that most the actual raw I/O is caused by the background operations or internal operations of MSLS designs. It's not directly tied into inserts. So we have to model the amortized write cost for inserts. So the basic observation here is that MSLS designs often amplify the amount of the data written to flash and disk. And so it can take some amount of data from the user application, but actually the amount of data written to flash and disk is larger. So as mentioned in the previous talk, we can model this kind of behavior using a write amplification, a metric called write amplification. So this is basically the size of the data written to flash and disk divided by the size of inserted data. So intuitively speaking, write amplification is how many times an item is written or rewritten to flash and disk. So write amplification is easier to analyze than raw throughput because we can calculate the numerator and denominator of write amplification separately. And write amplification is closely related to raw throughput because for a particular system, write amplification is inversely proportional to throughput. So in our paper, we also discussed how to model different performance metrics such as write amplification. So when we have a write amplification as the performance metric, we can try to model the system, but the system design can be very complex. So we first break down the system design into smaller components, and then model the cost of individual components, and then combine the cost of all components to obtain the overall system cost. In the next few slides, I'm going to talk about modeling the cost of table creation and compaction to give you a sense of how we can model a system. So how about table creation? So we want to model the cost of table creation, and as a strawman solution, we can assume that we know what inserts are being made to create this table. So in this example, we have 5 item inserts, and we have created a new table containing 4 items. So write amplification for this case is simply 4/5. But the problem of this strawman approach is that we have to keep track of individual item inserts, and then we must perform a redundant queue remover to get the size of a newly created table. So this is very slow to perform. So we have a better way. So we observe the behavior of MSLS designs. And typically, they use an application-defined constant to collect some number of inserts in memory to create a new table. So we can just take this constant as the denominator of write amplification. And then we can use a new analytic primitive called unique to express the size of created table. So unique calculates the expected number of unique keys in a certain number of requests, and this simply becomes the table size. So that's how we can calculate the write amplification for a regular table creation. So by taking this approach, we don't have to keep track of any item level information, and we can handle a general table creation. So we don't have to be very specific about the table creation event. But how about more complex operations, such as compaction? So let's look at the strawman solution again. So in this case, we know the content of input tables. And by combining these two tables, we can make a merged table. So the numerator part of write application becomes the size of a merged table. So that part is very simple. But the denominator part is not very clear. And actually, we have to know the original item insert that have created the input tables to find the denominator part. So this means that compaction has the same problem as table creation. So we have to keep track of original item search, and we must perform redundant key remover, which is pretty slow. So we take a better way. So we assume that we only know the size of the table, so we don't care about the content of the table. And then we use a new primitive called merge to estimate the expected number of unique keys in the input tables. And this simply becomes the output table size, so we can find the numerator part of write amplification. And then the difficult part is the denominator part. For that part, we use a different primitive called the inverse of unique. And the inverse of unique gives you the expected number of requests and containing a certain number of unique keys. The reason why the name of this primitive is the inverse of unique is that this is kind of the process, the reverse process of table creation. So in the table creation, we knew the number of insert requests, and then we expected the number of items in the table. But in this case, we know the size of the table, and then we guess the number of the expected number of requests. So this is the opposite process, and we can get the right application using these two primitives. So again, we don't have to know the item level information to use this analysis, and this is pretty general. So now you can ask, how can you obtain the table size 1 and table size 2? Yeah, these two are unknown variables here. And to obtain these values, actually, we have to understand the other aspects of the system design. And details are in our paper, and we model more complex systems such as LabDB and RocksDB. And especially for LabDB, we have very comprehensive design analysis. So if you are building LabDB-like systems, the information can be very useful. So let me talk a little more about analytic primitives. So we had three analytic primitives. So the first one was unique. Unique maps the number of requests to the number of unique keys. And the inverse of unique does the opposite. Merge takes multiple numbers of unique keys and returns the total number of unique keys. So in fact, they are very fast to compute because they are mostly simple mathematical expressions. And all of them consider redundancy of the input data. So if you calculate the unique P, then that can be smaller than P because unique only returns the number of unique keys. And the same goes for merge. And these three primitives can also reflect workload skew. So although it's not shown here, they can take the key popularity distribution. So if you compare ZIF and uniform distribution, the unique value for ZIF can be smaller than the unique value for uniform because a ZIF distribution contains more redundant items for the same number of requests. So that's why unique for ZIF could be smaller. So one caveat is that in our paper, we have mathematical formulation for these three primitives, but we assume that there is no dependence between requests. And this may not be true for many workloads. But for many practical workloads, the dependence between requests is pretty small. And in that case, we can simply use our primitives as is and still achieve high accuracy. When you build a system using these analytic primitives, we can enjoy high accuracy. So we compared the measured and estimated write amplification of insert requests on LabDB. So we used 1 kilobyte item size, and we varied the unique key count between 1 million and 1 billion, which corresponds to 1 gigabyte and 1 terabyte. And on this slide, we use the uniform key popularity distribution. And in our paper, we have ZIF distribution result, and which is even better than the result here. On the plot, I'm showing the unique key count as the x-axis, and the y-axis is the write implication. We used the original Lebedev implementation to obtain a few data points. And then we realized that the original Lebedev is not fast enough for me to just get more data points with large data sets. Because LabDB is a free system and it's invoking lots of system calls. So we built our own lightweight in-memory LabDB simulator that mimics the item level behavior of LabDB. So it's almost the same, but everything is just optimized. So we could run our simulator to obtain the data points for a larger data set. And then we compared this experimental result with a traditional analysis result. So here's the worst case analysis result. So basically, this analysis takes the worst case assumption from a typical asymptotic analysis, and then try to obtain the concrete right implication number for the given unique key count. So as you can see, the worst case analysis can still predict the cost increase as we increase the unique key count, but the actual value from this analysis is not quite accurate. So it suffers from overestimation. When we use our own analysis, we can achieve very accurate estimation. So the estimates are very similar to the experimental result, and the maximum error here is no more than 3%. So now you can see that our analysis result is quite similar to experiment. Then what's the value of performing our analysis after building a new analytic system model? The difference is that our evaluation method is very fast. So we compared the single runtime to obtain the right implication of insert request for a specific workload using a single set of system parameters. For LabDB implementation, we disabled fsync. And for our own LabDB simulation, it's done in memory, and it's very optimized for insert processing. So as you can see from the table, there's a huge difference in the speed. So experiment using the LabDB implementation takes almost 2 hours, even for small workload size. And experiment using LabDB simulation almost takes 1 hour. But compared to these two results, our evaluation method is very fast. So we can finish a single evaluation run within 5 milliseconds, and this is very fast. And it's about 5 to 6 orders of magnitude faster. So this is why we could make automatic system parameter optimization practical and finish in 2 minutes, not in years. I'd like to summarize. So we have proposed a new evaluation method for multi-stage log-source designs, and we use new analytic primitives that consider redundancy. We built an analytic system models using these primitives, and by using these system models, we can predict the performance of the system very accurately and fast. So the maximum error we have observed is 3 to 6.5% for LabDB and Rust-based universal compaction. And our evaluation method is much faster than the full experiment. So I mentioned some example applications. So automatic system optimization could improve the insert cost by up to 26%. And in paper, we also propose a design change for RocksDB, which could improve the insert speed by up to 32%. In fact, this design improvement, we believe that this design improvement has led to a recent addition of new compaction strategies in the latest version of RocksDB. Our code is available at GitHub, so you can download it and try it. This concludes my talk, and I'd like to take questions.
Yeah, I'll start. So can you, I think in the paper you describe it, but can you remind me what some of the optimizations are that your analysis suggested?
The second bullet point of the example applications. That's an interesting point. So I have a backup slide that is And that's not directly related to what we suggest for RocksDB, but this explains what's going on in the LabDB and why we suggest RocksDB to take this approach. So as explained in the previous talk, LabDB has an interesting compaction mechanism, which is shown on the slide like this. So they, when we have a table to compact in level 2, we also select all overlapping tables in the level 3 and write new merge tables in the level 3. Now, interesting question is how much overlaps we observe when we perform compaction when two level sizes differ by a factor of 10. So interesting thing here is that the overlaps, people may think that the overlap factor is 10 because the next level is 10x larger than the previous level. But actually this is not true because some property called non-uniformity occurring in the LabDB design. So that's why because, and this happens because LabDB performs the compaction in a round-robin way in the key space. And this creates some non-uniformity in a certain level. And this non-uniformity makes the table to be compacted very small in the key space and reduces the overlapping factor. So the key point here is that LabDB chooses the table to compact in a round robin way, and that reduces the compaction cost. That was not true for RocksDB. And when we applied the same table selection strategy for RocksDB, we could reduce the cost of the compaction, cost of the amortized insert cost in RocksDB. And that's the suggestion we make in this paper.
Kai Shen from University of Rochester. Very interesting work and very useful in practice. My question is, have you looked at when you sort of, my understanding is you have different kind of workload parameters in terms of key size, the record sizes and distribution, and you can find out the kinds of optimized parameters. Have you looked into sort of the stability of these parameters in terms of whether the parameters optimized for one workload configuration would actually work well for other parameters, or how drastically they differ? I guess the other related question is, you know, if you only have understanding about sort of the range of the workload parameter, your workload, can you come up with some kind of parameters that are kind of stably behaving across that range?
Well, so actually the optimized result, for example, the level sizes that is chosen by the optimization process, yeah, they are quite different depending on the skew in the workload. So we cannot say that the parameters are very stable, but the safe bet is just choose the geometric progression of the level sizes, and that's very safe choice. But actually, on the GIF distribution, you can choose a more aggressive growth rate between level sizes to optimize the right performance. But definitely, that's different from the original geometric progression of the level sizes. So yeah, I cannot say that yeah, there's much stability in the parameters. And actually, you have to optimize the parameters for a specific workload. And but if you have to choose one set of system parameters, a good choice would be just the original geometric progression.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Hi, good question. How much effort was involved in modifying LabDB to do this analytic estimation?
To obtain the estimation?
Yeah.
We didn't modify LabDB to get the estimation, but actually we built a new system model. So we have the code for pseudo code for the LabDB model, and this is the full source code to estimate the insert cost of LabDB. So it's pretty small. It's very short. Yeah.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.